My name's Ali, and this is the Russophiles Unite podcast, where we watch Russian films and films with a Russian connection. As always, I'm joined by a guest, and today I have a veteran guest of the podcast, Carrie. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Great to have you on here again.
Yeah, well, this is a last-minute podcast. You weren't able to arrange another guest, so, you know.
Actually, no, it's not a last-minute one, because I don't have any deadlines for this one at this point. This is just me trying to get ahead of myself, actually.
Oh, sorry. Instead of procrastinating, you're thinking ahead.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that. But anyway, for listeners who this is their first episode, or they have just haven't caught any episodes that you've been on before, could you tell us a little bit about you?
I am Ali's wife, which is why I'm on so many of these things. I'm an easy guest to get on, and
you are around, yes.
Yeah, I'm physically around, and we do watch a lot of movies together on a regular basis. Ali and I met while we were living in Russia. So you lived there 5 years, and I was there about 6 years total.
Yeah, and we were friends for a year before we started dating, and in that year, I feel like we watched quite a lot of stuff. Just that was
well. You started my UK cultural education by making me watch Yes Minister and then Yes Prime Minister.
Yeah, probably was a lot more TV than films. And
although Yes Minister is an excellent series, so it wasn't. It's comedy. It's great. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, although the irony is, it's considerably less farcical than current British politics.
Yeah, that's very true.
I would love for the, you know, supreme competence of Jim Hacker right now.
Yeah. In case anyone doesn't know, it's currently March 30th, 2019 when we're recording this. So yesterday was the scheduled Brexit day, and it hasn't happened. And Parliament has rejected every single possible option. So that's why we're saying that things seem to be shambles, and a TV character who is characterized as being relatively incompetent would be a better prime minister and better leadership than what we currently have.
Lot.
But that's probably enough about UK politics on a Russian movie podcast.
Exactly, yes. I should probably,
We are in the UK, by the way, because, you know, we have one American accent and one UK accent. So I could see how there might be a bit of confusion there.
Yes. And we also kind of got off the topic of you and your background.
I studied Russian language and literature in university, so that's how I ended up in Russia.
And able to meet me.
That was not a goal of going to Russia.
Well, I'm sure it wasn't. Like I wasn't particularly in Moscow to find an American bride.
Yeah, I mean, most foreign guys who go to Russia find a Russian girl.
Yeah. Somehow I ended up with an American. But
although on one of the dates we went on, the girls at the table next to us. This was, we went to a sushi place, or a Japanese place, and got sushi. And Ali's Russian was not great yet at the time. He was still in the process of learning. And when you're just starting out, you don't typically memorize all the different types of fish. Like, there are some other words that are slightly higher in the priority list in your vocabulary. So I was translating the ones that I knew for him so that he had a better idea of what he'd be ordering.
Yeah, because if you go to a sushi restaurant and say, I have fish, please, or a restaurant that serves sushi, it'd be like, yes, well, that's a given.
Yeah, and you don't want to just point to something and then have sea urchin when you're not really a big fan of sushi to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I do like sushi, but I haven't had it a ton of times in my life. And back then, I'd maybe had it like once or twice before that. So I didn't know what I liked.
Yeah. So the girls next to us, at the table next to us, kind of heard me doing this for him. So then they assumed that I was Russian and he was English and that I was only going on the date with him for his passport. Like, that's literally what they said.
Yeah. which of course I missed. I mean, I probably miss now just because my hearing in a crowded room isn't great, but...
Yeah, and I figured that you didn't need the...
commentary right there and then.
Right there and then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you certainly weren't dating me for the face. but anyway, yes, how do we segue into the film from there?
So the way that you pitched this movie to me was that Sophia Loren was in it, and I asked you if that meant that you wanted to ogle her for an hour and a half or 2 hours or however long this movie is.
Yeah, great segue, thank you.
You're welcome.
I mainly I said that because if I just said, oh, well, it's a film directed by Vittoria De Sica, you'd be like, who the heck's that?
No, Sophia Loren is an excellent actress.
Right, yes. I haven't seen her in a ton of stuff.
I haven't either, but whatever I have seen her in, she has been excellent.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember anything specific?
No.
Fair enough. The only thing I can recall that I've seen is, I think it was called The Millionaires, which was her and Peter Sellers in an adaptation of a George Bernard Shaw play, where Peter Sellers plays an Indian doctor, so...
Brown face?
I think so? It was a long time ago that I saw this, but yeah, he's playing an Indian guy. Maybe he was wearing some makeup. Again, not super sensitive casting, but yeah, I've seen that, and I remember that being, you know, fairly witty, but I mean, it's... George Bernard Shaw, that's sort of what you get.
Back to the movie we're actually going to watch today.
Right, yes. So the movie we're actually going to watch is called Sunflower. I did not write the Italian down, so I'm sure I'll...
It's an Italian movie, in case we haven't made this clear.
Yes.
Through the fact that the director's name is very Italian and it has Sophia Loren in it.
Yes. I mean, she was in plenty of Hollywood films, so
True. It's
not a given, but yes... Why, I hear you ask, are we watching an Italian film?
Why, Ali?
Yes, yes. I realised halfway through that was a rhetorical question I was doing. Brilliant podcasting chops there. Yeah, so it is a film about an Italian couple, again, probably slightly obviously, who are separated in World War II because the chap gets sent to the front, and specifically the Eastern Front, i.e. Russia, Soviet Union. I think it might be Ukraine specifically, but yes, Russian-speaking parts. And I think, please, listener, write in and correct me if you know different, I think this was the first foreign film that received permission from the Soviet authorities to be shot over there. So that's, you know, just from a historical point of view, that's kind of cool. So I thought, I want to check this out. And also it's a fairly famous director in terms of Italian cinema at that time. I have not seen many Italian films. Have you seen many, Carrie?
Not that I know of, so that's probably a no.
Yeah, they must have been dubbed if they were, because otherwise you would have noticed from, you know, people speaking a lot of Italian.
Yeah, most of the movies that I've seen have been Hollywood.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I think we should probably go and watch the film and...
Considering as neither of us really know much about it.
Yeah, the only thing else I have scribbled down here is that the male lead is Marcello Mastroianni, who was, if I'm pronouncing his surname right, who was in some pretty big Italian films of the period. I think he was in La Dolce Vita, which I haven't seen but heard is one of the ones you probably should see at some point if you're, you know, any kind of cinema buff.
You also have neorealism scribbled down.
I do, yes. It turns out this director, Vittoria De Sica, was a director who was in with that kind of group of Italian directors.
Could you briefly define neorealism for people who might not know what it is?
No, because I really don't know enough about it. I mean, essentially, it was a like cinema movement in Italy, like immediately after World War II, and that's about as much as I can tell you.
Okay.
So it's a thing.
It is a thing.
Right. Okay, so on with the film. But what do we normally say at this point?
It's time for dinner.
Yeah, come to think about it, that...
When I am a guest on this podcast, we normally do talk about food.
Yes, yes. Although you can't talk about Georgian food this time, because...
We're having tacos.
Yes. And there's no Georgian connection, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
Yes, but what do we usually say apart from it's time for dinner?
Поехали.
Because?
It means let's go.
Excellent. So, 3, 2, 1...
Поехали!
Just watched I Girasoli, or Sunflower, but before we let you know what we thought about it, we're going to have a quick summary of the plot. Spoiler warning, massive spoiler warning, it's pretty much impossible to talk about this film at all unless we give away a lot about what actually happens. So
yeah, there's a major plot point where you find out definitely one way or another about a third of the way through the movie, so we can't discuss it without giving this away. So if you'd really like to watch this movie and be surprised, I'm afraid you'll have to go away and watch it now before you can come back.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you'll be massively surprised, but yeah. All right, spoiler warning issued. Over to you, Carrie.
So the main characters are Giovanna and Antonio. And most of the beginning of the movie is told in flashback, back to when they first met or were dating or just hooking up or whatever. It's hard to tell.
I think hooking up is fair. I mean, when we first see them, you get the impression they've known each other maybe a couple of hours.
Or a few days maximum. Anyway, it's middle of World War II. Or at some point during World War II, and Antonio's about to be sent to Africa, and he's just on a few days' leave. So he and Giovanna decide to get married. He gets an extra 12 days' leave. At some point during that 12 days, they fall in love, and they want to get him out of having to go to war, so they decide that he's going to act like he's crazy, and so he gets a psychiatric dismissal or medical exemption from the war. It doesn't work, and so he gets sent to the Russian front line.
Kind of as punishment for trying to get out of
military
service.
Yeah, he basically has to volunteer to go to be sent to Russia. And from there, he doesn't come back. So Giovanna spends the next 10, 12, 15 years, you know, questioning every soldier who comes back and trying to find him and looking for him. She does eventually find somebody who says, yeah, I was in Ukraine-ish, probably. You're not sure exactly where, because he finds a soldier who is with Antonio in Russia. But he's like, it was the middle of nowhere, thousands of miles of snow, you know, soldiers all around. Death, cold, so much cold. And this other soldier basically says, Antonio just got to the point where he couldn't walk anymore, and he told me to keep going. And so he was just left in the snow, and presumably to die of hypothermia. But Giovanna doesn't believe he's dead, goes to Russia to try and find him. And then the rest of the movie is, will she find him? Won't she find him? Will they be reunited? Won't they be reunited? You know, she spent so much of her adult life living as a widow because He's missing. He's not listed as dead in the official roles. He's just missing. So what's going to happen? And that's where the rest of the movie unfolds.
Excellent. That's a great setup. Thanks, Carrie. And we sort of haven't spoiled it so far.
We haven't yet.
But we're gonna.
But that's basically the first third of the movie. The next two-thirds-ish? Skimpy two-thirds. Is
the issue is resolved.
Yeah, because she travels to Russia and finds her answer.
Yes. So, awesome.
Yeah.
So, how'd you like it?
I liked it. I thought it was really good.
Oh, great. Yeah, I sort of had...
I mean, there were some technical problems with the movie. The version that we watched, the sound wasn't great, so it messed with the music and made the music sound weird.
Yeah.
There were also some portions that were not translated into English. Like, it was dubbed, which Ali hates anyway.
Sorry, Martin, I know you like dubbing.
But then...
Just one of our listeners / guests.
Gotcha. And then, but there were parts where it wasn't dubbed and it would just be the conversation in Italian.
Apropos of nothing.
Yeah. Like, yeah. There's one point where Giovanna and Antonio were making an omelette together, and I could tell what they were doing just because I spoke enough Spanish and the context clues, but once they got off the topic of making the omelette and they started talking about something else, it's like, nope, can't get this.
Speaking really fast, yeah. Enough cognates between Spanish and Italian, yeah.
While they were talking about the food, but it was just... So that caused a few problems. That was mainly in the first... half to third or whatever in the version we watched. So that was really annoying and distracting. But that's not the way the director would have intended the movie to be.
Yeah.
And that, I think, had more to do with the quality of the version that we watched.
Yeah.
So as long as you get a version that is fully dubbed into whatever language you would like to listen to it into.
Yes. Or, you know, the original with subtitles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I found that was interesting as far as the dubbing. I don't know 100%, but I get the impression that Sophia Loren probably dubbed herself.
I don't know.
I don't know about Marcello Mastroianni. I don't know whether he spoke English or not, so I don't know whether he did. But all the Italians had Italian accents. So that was initially a little bit weird. Because it sort of drew attention to the fact. I mean, I guess it possibly would have been weirder if they were all like, oh, hello, my name is Antonio, and I am definitely Italian.
Yeah, that would have been weirder.
Yeah, but it also, I think that's why I generally prefer subtitles over the dubbing, because you don't have the distracting accents thing.
Well, it is a bit weird when the sounds coming out of the mouths and the actual mouth movements don't match up.
Yes. Yeah. And there are, because of the subject matter, there are some times where people are getting pretty irate.
Mm-hmm.
And you just feel like it would sound better in Italian.
Well, there's, I know one person who had an internship at Sesame Street. And the entire goal of the internship was for them to count how many times the puppets' mouths moved, like opened and shut, so that when they translated Sesame Street into the other languages, they'd be able to make the script fit so that it matched in the other languages what the puppets' mouths were doing in English.
Oh my goodness, that sounds excruciating.
Well, that's why you give it to the intern to do.
You wanted to work on Sesame Street.
You want to work in film. You get this horrible job.
Oh.
Not that this relates to the movie Sunflower at all, but...
Oh, yeah. Just a random dubbing fact.
Yes, random dubbing fact.
That's pretty fun. I'm glad you liked it.
Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I found the pacing slightly odd. Like, I kept thinking, okay, it's got to nearly be over now. Although at the same time, knowing there was still quite a lot of minutes to go, just like the story didn't have...
So it's a bit Lord of the Ringsy in that it's like, okay, here's the end. Nope, not the end yet. Okay, here's the end. Nope, not the end yet.
Yeah, I mean, not as bad as that, but it just didn't feel like it didn't feel very tightly written, but not necessarily in a bad way. I mean, it felt like it was probably more true to life in that regard.
I thought it was very true to life in the way it ended and what happened and how things shook out.
Yeah, that was quite, I guess, believable, although also slightly random. I think we're at the point where it's like, okay, we can say stuff. We've done enough spoiler warnings. If you're going to be upset with us after this, you know, we can't say we didn't tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that was very, like, it was very random that he ended up going to a prostitute's flat so he could use her phone.
So basically, at one point, Antonio is alive and he's living in Russia and he's found a new wife and kid. But then he travels back to Italy to see Giovanna.
No, Carrie. He goes back to see his mother.
He goes back to see his mother, but really he goes back to see Giovanna and see, can they be an item again? Because Giovanna found Antonio and then immediately ran away and got on the train, so they didn't get a chance to talk or anything. And he's like, maybe I could be with her. You know, I spent 12 years, not even 15 years, whatever, not even trying to get back to Italy. But now I will try. And then he goes back. And then, yeah, you think that he's going to sleep with a prostitute. And as it turns out, he just wants to use her phone.
Yeah, it does seem
like... call Giovanna to see if he can hook up with her.
Yeah.
Or run away with her or whatever.
Or something.
Yeah.
But then he just goes round to her house and does sad face.
Yes.
I mean, Marcello Mastroianni does very good sad face.
The acting is really good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's why I would really have liked to seen a non-dubbed version, just so that wasn't kind of getting in the... I mean, you could say subtitles get in the way of the performances a bit, but yeah.
Well, I don't know. There was definitely a... at least with Sophia Loren, there was an arc with her character and her movements and her hand gestures and the way she was in the beginning of the movie versus, well, before she knew what happened to Antonio versus after she found him. Because I found that her hand gestures and her movements and just the way she acted, like, it was bigger and more what you would say stereotypically Italian with the way she gestured with her hands. And then afterwards, she's quieter and...
a bit more subdued.
Subdued is a good word for it.
Yeah,
I mean... like she doesn't start grieving, really. Even though she wears mourning while he's disappeared and she can't find him, it's not like she's really grieving because she thinks he's still alive.
Yeah.
And then after she finds out what's truly happened to him, she stops wearing black and she's no longer officially in mourning. But there's something about her behavior and the way she gestures that becomes different.
Okay. Huh. That makes me want to watch it again to see if I could notice that. Yeah.
And the hairstyle, it goes from, you know, very short when she was younger to wearing it up and back to then... you know, finds Antonio, then she starts wearing it down again.
Oh, yeah. And well, I definitely noticed the hair.
But then in the final scene, she's wearing it up again.
How did you feel about him as a character and his choices, shall we say?
I thought he was a bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
He leaves her. He leaves his next... well, basically, Masha becomes his wife.
Yeah.
Essentially. And then he's, like, ready to leave Masha. Like, he's just... I don't know. It is sad in that it's like it's very much a what could have been. What could have been with his life, with Antonio's life and Giovanna's life, if they had been just allowed to live together and get married and world events hadn't ripped them apart. Because war is, you know, I don't want to dismiss World War II and act like...
it's not a big deal.
It's not a big deal to have been a soldier on the Eastern Front during that war. Like, that was... of course it could mess with your head.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the film, in some ways, is not that interested in going into much detail about the war, but it does enough to be like, okay, this was terrible. This was a really bad thing to have gotten caught up in.
Yeah. So I don't want to be all like, well, he, of course, he should have gone right back to her, and it should have been, you know, an easy choice, and how could he have struggled with anything? Because, no, he did go through something that was incredibly difficult, but he builds a life with another woman and has a kid and a nice little house and all this other stuff, and meanwhile, his wife back home is mourning, like, has pressed the pause button on her life entirely while she's waiting for him.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, like, alternative lives.
Mm.
The other alternative is if she'd not gone to Russia at all, or she'd gone to Russia and not managed to track him down, which is also a likely outcome.
Yeah.
It just seems like everyone would have been so much happier if they'd, you know, she'd not actually...
I don't know.
Because do you think she would have just continued to, like, not move on with her life if there wasn't a, like, someone said, oh, yeah, no, he's definitely dead? Even if, obviously, it would have had to have been a case of mistaken identity, but...
No, I think that she needed, for her sake, with being able to get on with her life, she needed some sort of definitive, oh, that, look, there he is, he's alive, or some sort of definitive, no, look, there's his grave, he's dead.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Like, found somebody who buried him or something, and then she could have gone on and...
Yeah.
I don't think she would have been happy that he was dead, but she would have had closure.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe if she'd just gone to Russia, never found conclusively one way or the other, maybe she would have continued to, like you say, live life on pause. But, I mean, for Antonio, and certainly for Masha... Antonio's new wife.
Russian wife.
Second wife, yeah. That would have been happier. Because I feel so bad for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you saved this guy's life, you've been with him for years and years, have a, what, like, 4 or 5-year-old kid?
I would have said a bit older than that, but still.
Yeah. And then he's just like, oh, this woman's turned up. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm going to be sad all the time.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I don't know.
Maybe... And a significant amount of time elapses between him, Giovanna, finding him for the first time and him then traveling to Italy.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they establish very well traveling outside of the Soviet Union during, you know, for most of the Soviet period is not easy. They don't particularly want to let you just go.
Mm-hmm. And it's, I don't want to give this part away, but they do make it very clear in the movie that time has passed.
Mm, yeah.
It's not like he runs after her a month later. It's significant time has passed between that meeting and then being able to go to Italy.
Yeah, it is interesting because it's in some ways it's kind of like you were together for 12 days.
Yeah, you're together for 12 days and that 12 or maybe 2 weeks maximum.
Yeah.
And that after that 2 weeks completely or sent their lives on completely different trajectories.
Yeah, yeah. It was kind of like almost that defined the rest of their lives in a sense.
Mm-hmm. But it was interesting how their lives kind of then paralleled in Russia and Italy. So for example, they both start out in Italy, it was in Antonio's village, and, you know, it's kind of this rustic house in the village, and Antonio and Masha live in this rustic house outside of Moscow, and then you see Antonio and Masha get moved into a nice new apartment.
Which is made a big deal of.
Yeah, which is made a big deal of, and it would be a big deal to move from that little rustic house to new apartment, and also... You know, after Giovanna comes back from Russia, she moves to a city, you know, moves out of the village, moves out of Antonio, the house she had been in with Antonio, and moves into a fairly modern apartment in the city as well.
Yeah, but you get the impression that she'd been a city dweller before because he makes a big deal about how she's Neapolitan.
Yeah,
and that she's true. More of like a... I mean, they never use the term city slicker, but it's more sophisticated.
I don't know, but she's not rich.
No, she's not rich, but she, I don't know, I guess.
Because she's a seamstress. She says, you know, I'm a seamstress, I pay my own way.
Yeah.
But living with relatives.
Yeah, that's right. I think she says something about how she was better off
when Dad was still alive or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. But she's initially
And
like,
Dad was a barber, was it?
Yes.
So they wouldn't have been raking it in.
No, but
maybe lower middle class to middle class.
Yeah, but still, city life, probably very different from
small village, yeah.
Especially back then.
Mm-hmm.
Although she's like, oh, you're a farmer. And he's like, no, I'm not a farmer. Look at these hands.
I'm an electrician or a plumber or whatever he is.
Yeah.
Some sort of trade.
He's an electrician. He's saying he's a plumber, Carrie. Just because he's Italian.
Sorry, I don't get that one.
It's a me, a Mario.
Oh. See, I wasn't thinking that at all.
Sorry, I've just ruined the podcast.
Yes, you have. You completely ruined it. Shame on you.
Right, okay. Let's pull it together. Yeah, I mean, the relationship was definitely very... I believed it, even though I thought, like, their choices were kind of stupid.
Yeah, getting married after you've basically known each other for, like, 2 days is stupid.
Yeah, but they do make the point of, like, it's not like we were the only ones.
Yeah, they do make a point of a lot of people seemed to be getting married in order to get the 12 days of leave.
And she said, well, you know, 12 days, the war might be over anyway, which is kind of like, I don't know whether that's just a joke on her part or whether that's genuinely, like, at that point, Italy was looking so like they were going to cave.
Or nobody thought that it would spiral into a huge world war like World War I had been. But it seemed like the bridge bombing completely changed her mind.
Yeah, I mean, I get the impression that by the time they meet, Italy's kind of in the thick of things. I mean, just judging by the fact that it's far enough along in the war that presumably the British can be bombing Italy. Because it took them a while to get to the point where they could launch. I'm guessing that would have been attack launched from Malta, but I could be wrong.
Well, there's no way that point of the plot doesn't seem to be really important.
No.
But it did seem like the war hadn't really touched them, as in they hadn't seen anything, and then they're going for a walk and they see a bridge get bombed.
Yeah, them as individuals, I guess. Yeah, I suppose so. Because it's not like he'd done a tour of duty before. I think he just got called up.
Yeah, it's not clear, and I don't think it really matters.
Yeah, and also he seems a little bit on the older end, so maybe that's...
Yeah, early 30s, I think that he says somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, he's supposed to be early 30s, although...
At the beginning of the movie, yeah.
Yeah, although he looks about 40 at the beginning.
Well, I think, you know, at his end age is supposed to be late 40s, so...
Yeah.
Mid to late 40s or something. So that makes more of a... I think they cast the actors to be the age they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
For the quote-unquote end. Although the end is like the last two-thirds of the movie. So...
Yeah.
Which does make more sense.
Yes.
Although Sophia Loren does a better job of being able to look younger for the beginning of the movie. And then age as the movie goes on. Even though she's basically... incredibly beautiful throughout, so
yeah. A lot of us watching it was you just going, Sophia Loren is gorgeous.
Well, it's just like she just throws on whatever dress, and you can sometimes, like, you'll see her getting dressed and she just puts on this wrap dress and suddenly she looks incredibly amazing.
Yeah,
as opposed to just the slip or whatever baggy shapeless whatever she'd been wearing before.
Yeah, I mean, you did have issues early on with some of the costuming choices.
Oh yeah, there's one point in which her bra strap gets cut or her dress opened a little bit, and so it's just like, and Sophia Loren was an amply endowed woman, let's say, and it's just kind of like you'd cover up a little bit more if you were then going to run like that, because that would not be comfortable to run with your bra strap broken.
Yeah, yeah. It is kind of like the director is like, no, no, it's fine. We just want to keep things the way they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To have her costumed like this with an extremely deep V is a good choice.
It will be appreciated by half the audience, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, so that's not totally cool.
But that was really, like, this was not a movie that was all about sex and how much skin can I get away with showing. That wasn't the main focus of it.
It wasn't, but you do also get the impression that for the 12 days before he's shipped off to the front,
mm-hmm.
that's pretty much all that they're doing, apart from when he makes the omelette.
Yeah, basically.
Because there's one point they're like, I don't even know what day it is, or whether it's 6 o'clock in the morning or 6 o'clock in the evening, so...
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe that's why he was... Sorry, I'm just being crude now. Why he was so eager to get back.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
Well, you know, when he's deciding that actually he's going to leave his current wife and small child and go back to Italy to see if he can make things work. Maybe that's the I was being flippant saying, oh, well, we'd just have sex all the time. But I think maybe that is part of the problem with his comparison between the two relationships is he had like this one very short, very intense period of relationship with Giovanna, whereas he's been, it's never properly, or never clearly established, but...
10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
Has a kid.
Yeah, they specifically reference the fact that Stalin's dead, and certainly they wouldn't have been letting foreigners in prior to Stalin dying. So yeah, it's...
So that's why 10,
12 years minimum. So mm-hmm. he's been with his current wife for 10 years plus and had all like the ups and downs of relationship
mm-hmm.
and, you know, life being difficult
mm-hmm.
and boring at times. And yeah, it's been like a normal, real relationship versus like
honeymoon and that's it.
Honeymoon and chilling out and being in bed the whole time and
mm-hmm.
drinking lots of wine.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But you don't know, but Giovanna also clearly loved him.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And was willing to wait and put her life on hold for years.
Yeah, I find that.
Wait for him to come back.
That is really interesting because you think that, you know, several years after the war, she'd just like come to the conclusion, nah, probably not coming back.
Well, it depends on how... I don't know what the attitude of Italians was towards war widows.
Yeah, whether it was like, he died for the country, so you shouldn't marry anyone else, because that would be cheating on... I don't know whether they had that attitude.
Well, because when she does come back, when she comes back from Russia, after seeing Antonio, she at first doesn't tell Antonio's mom that he's still alive.
Hmm.
Or at least you get the impression from that, from their conversation, because Antonio's mom calls her a whore.
Yeah.
Because she's stopped wearing mourning, she has her hair down, she went on a date with a guy.
Yeah.
He's like, so I don't know if she calls her a whore because it's like, well, your husband's dead and you're kind of married forever, eternally to this dead guy. And but then Giovanna comes right back with, he's alive and he's got another wife and a kid.
And she's like, oh.
Yeah. So it's... I don't know if she would have been expected in Italy to have just been permanently wedded to him. And, like, that was her life.
Yeah, I have no idea. So I don't know if we have any Italian listeners who know anything about World War II.
Yeah.
Because I imagine they have, like, quite an ambivalent attitude about it because...
Well, and it's hard to tell what would have the attitude have been right after the war.
Yeah.
War towards the widows of soldiers who died, and how would that have been treated versus later versus...
Yeah. I don't know.
Because to basically, you know, she was widowed at like 20 and to then have to spend the next 40 to 50 years of your life essentially living as a widow.
That would be pretty harsh.
Yeah. But it'd be easier to handle if you were, in fact, a widow as opposed to, nah, my husband just left me.
Yeah.
For someone else. Yeah. And he's getting to have, you know, a spouse and a child and everything that I would have wanted to have but don't get to have because I'm waiting for you to come back and you can't be bothered to come back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair to say it's a pretty intense film in terms of the emotional stuff that's going on. I did want to talk, it's probably a little anticlimactic, but something about a little bit about the visuals. How did you like those?
There are a number of sweeping shots, especially in Russia, with regards to the landscape. So you get some sweeping shots across the snow, and with the soldiers marching and everything. It reminded me a bit of the one that we watched that was War and Peace.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you have Napoleon's army and, like, the guys are dropping dead.
Oh, yeah.
As they're marching back in the snow. And it's the same with this. Like, people are dropping of hypothermia and whatnot as they're marching in the snow.
Including Antonio.
Yeah, including Antonio.
Until he gets to make involuntary giant snow angels.
Yes. as he's being dragged across the snow. Yeah. And then there are sweeping shots of sunflower fields. Like, just field after field. Like, no, it's just one giant field of sunflowers.
Yeah, and it's a wraparound. The first thing we see is sunflowers, and the end is... So, in case
you're... And in the middle, there's sunflowers. Yeah, like, there's just lots of sunflowers.
So, in case you're wondering, no, it's not a figurative title.
No, it's, like, literally lots of sunflowers.
Yeah, loved is probably slightly ill-chosen word in the circumstances, but the sweeping shot of the birch crosses all across those hillsides of where the Italian soldiers had been.
Yeah.
That was like, oh my goodness.
Mm-hmm. And that did get you, because it was a bit more, it brought home a bit of the numbers of just how many there were.
Because it's a very, like, most of it focuses very much in on a very small handful of characters. It's mainly just the two of them plus Antonio's mother plus Masha, his Russian wife. There are a couple of, like, other characters, but that gives you some of the scale. I thought the scene, you briefly mentioned it in the summary, of Antonio being left behind by his comrade, that was, like, really heart-wrenching. Because the guy, like, he really tries.
Yeah, he really tries to carry Antonio.
But Antonio is just, like, I don't know, he's kind of half dead. He's not moving. And the guy is just, like, it's obviously never said, but you just get the look on his face, and he at the point where he realizes, either I can leave this guy behind to die, or I can continue trying to help him, and we'll both freeze to death.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really awful. But yeah, that whole brief actual war sequence is really, it's really efficiently done.
Mm-hmm. On the other scenery shots, to wrench it slightly to a lighter topic, they do a lot of juxtaposition of the old Russian churches with the onion domes and the more industrial bits of Moscow.
Yeah, they do.
And back and forth between those buildings or train tracks and versus the little old wooden houses and just going back and forth between those. So that was kind of atmospheric in a jarring way.
Yeah, well, in that you kind of get whiplash from stuff that looks sort of like it could have been there, you know, 100 years, well, hundreds of years in some cases.
To stuff that would have been modern for that time.
Yeah.
When it was shot or not long before when it was shot.
Yeah. And in one shot I saw there was a whole bunch of cranes up. So you definitely get the impression of, like, Moscow is a city that is being, like, built up at the time.
Yeah. And it was stuff that was now, Allie and I would think, well, that's very central Moscow.
Mm.
But then it's like, okay, it's gradually expanding out.
It's outskirts at this point. Yeah. I mean, it was interesting just getting to see Russia from that period in a non-Russian film.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. And it didn't, to me anyway, it didn't feel super like, we're just showing you the nice, idealistic bits. And, you know, there is some kind of like dirt under the fingernails, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, you get some very kind of tumble down bits of village where you have roofs that are just like, I don't know, corrugated iron kind of strapped on.
Or thatch.
Yeah. Well, the thatch looks quite like rustic and pleasant.
Picturesque.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of dirt roads.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
So I found it interesting that they're not like totally trying to manicure everything and make it look like, look how much more advanced the Soviet Union is than everywhere else. We're super futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
So that was interesting. I mentioned this when we were watching the film. During some of the like actual battle sequences, which there aren't very many.
There's one.
Yeah.
There's really just one.
They have like a red flag superimposed across the top of it. It's kind of like...
That was kind of weird.
Yeah. I don't know whether this is like a direct... I don't know anything about the director, let alone their politics. So I'd be interested to know whether they were like a leftist and were like, yay, go communists. Or whether it's just, we'll stick a red flag on here so it's clear it's the Soviet troops attacking the Italians. Because it's, you know... People's uniforms aren't super clear, but it was interesting and very unusual to see them attacking like on skis and with Tommy guns.
Yeah, it has all of the Russian troops looking very much alike because you don't see any faces. They're just all in these white snowsuits. They parachute in, they put on their cross-country skis, they have their Tommy guns, and then they ski into battle.
Yeah, which
is kind of weird.
I mean, I'd never heard of the actual paratrooping bit, but I did know from listening to the Dan Carlin Ghosts of the Ostfront series that the Russians did in some places ski into battle and also did cavalry charges, which you don't think of something that would happen in World War II, but it did in some places just because it was the best way of getting around. But, yeah, that must have been terrifying. Like, just when you thought things couldn't get worse, they're attacking.
Yeah.
So that was pretty incredible to see, like, a film version of, even if it's brief. But it's... I don't want to say it's incidental, but, like I said before, they're not dwelling on it. It's not like a war epic.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. So I think we've given a flavour of the film.
Yeah, I think we have.
Yeah, I feel like maybe I could have done with a bit more time to process what I saw.
It's very emotional, and a lot of what it's trying to say is around, it's kind of like a what if in their lives? What if they made this choice? What if this had happened instead of that? So it does kind of get you thinking about the what-ifs of life.
Mm, yeah, definitely.
Which in everyone's life is going to look different.
Of course, yeah. So you'd recommend this to other people?
Yeah, it was very good.
Yeah, awesome. And presumably that means you'd be keen to see other films with this director and this cast or actors?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because...
trying to suss out other movies for us to watch, or what?
Well, a little bit, but also it's. I think it's interesting for people listening to be like, okay, was it good enough that it was like, oh, this was fine, I kind of enjoyed it, or no, this was good, I want to see more work by this director. Because I did see that the director and Sophia Loren and Marcello Mastroianni were in... a film a few years before this that was called Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. I think it's like a anthology piece where they play three different couples.
Mm.
But I think that's more of a comedy.
Mm.
But yeah, that would be interesting to see.
Perhaps not do for the podcast because it has absolutely no connection.
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting doing it for the podcast. I'm just suggesting watching it because I've heard it's meant to be good.
Gotcha.
All right. Well, thank you, Carrie, for being a fantastic guest once again.
Thanks for having me on.
All right. And thank you for listening. Da svidaniya, folks.
Da svidaniya.
Arrivederci.
Paka.
Okay, folks, so that is it for this month's episode. But before we go, a couple of things. I feel kind of bad for not really doing my homework on the whole Italian neorealism side of things. As we mentioned, this was a long time ago that we recorded this episode, and subsequently I have seen a couple of De Sica's earlier neorealist films, The Bicycle Thieves, and then just yesterday, Umberto D. Highly recommend both of those, although both were quite heavy in terms of subject matter and rather sad, so be warned. If you would like to hear more about Italian neorealism from somebody who has actually done their homework, I would highly recommend that you check out the Her Head in Films podcast. The host, Caitlin, has done a couple of recent episodes, one of them on Umberto D and another one on Roberto Rossellini's Journey to Italy. And yeah, it's just a great podcast and well worth your time to check out. As always, if you'd like to get in touch, I'd love to hear from you. So, ways you can do that, there's email, roosefilesunite@gmail.com. There's Twitter, the show's handle is @roosefilesu. And there's a Facebook community you can join, which is Roosefiles Unite and Talk About Movies and Stuff. Literally, that is the name of the group, because that's how I name things. So yeah, would love to hear from you on those. If you can spare a few minutes to rate and or review the show, that would be incredible. I would really appreciate it. Probably the best places you can do that are Apple Podcasts. In fact, just got this review last week from The Medievalist, who wrote this. They called the podcast Fun, Funny, and Knowledgeable and said, "This podcast is always a delight to listen to. Ali and his guests have thoughtful, interesting opinions on the films they cover, and I always learn something unexpected about Russian culture and or history. This podcast has also introduced me to a number of films that I might not have been aware of or thought to watch, but that turned out to be fantastic. Looking forward to many more episodes." Well, thank you very much, The Medievalist. And another good place to review us would be over on Podchaser. And we had this review from Mikey Man, who said, "An excellent and uniquely themed podcast with a well-spoken host." Right, thank you. "And interesting guests." Little editorial aside here, but yes, I am very fortunate in the wonderful guests I've managed to have on the podcast. And Mikey Man finishes up by saying, "I always look forward to a new episode." Well, thank you very much, Mikey Man. So yeah, please do consider reviewing the show, and I may well read it out on a subsequent episode. If you're able to, I'd be incredibly grateful if you'd consider supporting the show monetarily. There is a direct way you can do that. If you go to ko-fi.com/roosefilesunite, that's ko-fi.com. Or if you can stand to hear a couple of ads, this show is part of the Radio Public Paid Listens program, so you listen and they pay me. So if you'd consider listening to the show on the Radio Public app, that would be incredible as well. As always, thank you very much for listening to this show, and I'll talk to you next month. Bye for now.
Mario!